Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on identity theft when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton. Well, Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft. Someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there is no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. You know it and I know it, he said. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions. And if you did, you know beforehand that you'd never see them appear in print. And I'm paid weekly for giving my honest opinions, or keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with. Others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program, the New World Order, men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers, the Bushes and Bundys, the Carnegies and the Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and to survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, best of all, it's free. You can call right now to order yours. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send your email request. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Identity theft. We hear a lot about it in the news. Almost every news broadcast, maybe not everyone, but at least once a week when I'm watching the CBS Evening News or NBC, there will be a story on there about identity theft, about identity thieves, and sometimes it gets to be pretty big scale, pretty big time. They steal your credit card numbers, your social security number, they clean out your bank account, and they do all these things in your name. They run up big bills. And then when you try to restore your credit, when you try to get back to where you were, you find out that there isn't a program that'll help you. The government won't help you. The credit agencies won't help you. The banks won't help you. And now I see the insurance companies are selling identity theft insurance. That's right. You can get identity theft insurance. You could leave it to the insurance companies. If there was ever a hazard that could be dreamed of or thought of or imagined by the mind of man, that there'd be some insurance company there to protect you from those evils and ills. Well, we hear about these individual thefts of people's identity, but have you ever heard of the theft of an entire nation's identity? Have you ever heard that the entire nation, millions upon millions of people, their identity had been taken over by some other group of people, and their identity stolen from them, their birthright stolen from them, their property stolen from them? You ever heard of such a thing? Well, there's a review of that very scenario in the Bible. I know the Bible is a book that nobody wants to read, nobody wants to hear about, but I thought I'd share this with you because this is such an identity theft. This is an identity theft that trumps all identity thieves, all identity theft that you've ever heard of. I mean, this is an identity of an entire nation of people. Multiple millions of people's identity have been taken from them. The crazy part of it is the people whose identity has been taken away from them don't even know who in the hell they are to start with. Last week, we talked about these people that didn't know their identity, Israel's Tribes Today by Stephen M. Collins. And when we got up to the tribe of Judah, he told us about the migrations of the Jews, and he told us quite a little story. And I'm not taking any exception now to Mr. Collins' book, but there was a piece that was left out. A piece that was left out. Because there's another piece of the story that just isn't told very much by most anyone. And the Israelites lost their identity, but there was a cause for the loss of that identity. But first of all, let me describe to you how it is that I know that they lost their identity. In Revelation 2:9 and in Revelation 3:9, here's what God says. He says, I know your works and tribulation and poverty, but you're rich, and I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Did you catch the importance of that? There are people out there that call themselves Jews and are not. Have you ever heard of such a thing? That's identity theft. For somebody to say that he's something that he isn't, you know, if somebody comes along and says, I'm George Gordon, and here's my social security number and my credit card number, and I want to buy this, so that would be stealing my identity if somebody else said that. They would be misrepresenting me. They would be doing something that's wrong, that's a theft, to steal somebody else's identity. And here in Revelation 2, verse 9 says, there are those that say they are Jews, but they're not. And they're of the synagogue of Satan. He not only said it once, he said it twice. And in Revelation 3:9, that's the next chapter over, 2:9 and 3:9, he says, behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. These people are liars. In fact, in order for them to lie, they would have to know that they're not Jews. It's not a mistake in identity. It's an out-and-out lie. These people are lying. They're not Jews. They do lie. Behold, I'll make them to come and worship before your feet and to know that I have loved you. Now, that's twice. I think every Jew in the world, every Jew in America, Canada, and Australia, New Zealand, should be very concerned about the theft of their identity. I know I would be. If I got word that somebody was using my name or any of my personal information and they were out there raping, robbing, and pillaging people, I would be very concerned about that. I would be outraged. I would be just mad as hell. Well, Stephen Collins told the story, and when he got up to the tribe of Judah, he told the story of Judah, and he got the story right. I'm not complaining about the story, but there's more to the story. And the guy who wrote the rest of the story, his name is Charles A. Wiseman. Not just a small book. It's entitled, Who is Esau Edom? And in a recent time and land of the Bible, over 3,700 years ago, Rebekah, the wife of the patriarch Isaac, was informed by God that she would give birth to twins whose fate would be as diverse as their character. The birth of these twins, Esau and Jacob, and their ensuing destinies would have the most profound impact on future events in the world. This analysis of the history and the prophecy of Esau and his descendants will unveil many of the problems in this world and will bring a new perspective on wars and conflicts and Zionism and political conspiracies and anti-Semitism, economic problems, and the Jewish issue. This material will also explain why one group of people have made concerted efforts for the establishment of hate laws and world government, abortion, crime, interracial marriages, wars, deindustrialization, and slavery. The ancient and pronounced struggle that prevailed between Esau and Jacob still exists today, and it's causing the world to be turned upside down. And the question of who is Esau Edom undoubtedly involves the most stupendous drama ever enacted in the annals of mankind. That drama is presented here to help us better understand God's plans for man here on planet Earth. Now, last week when we covered Stephen M. Collins and Israel's tribes today, we took a look at the patriarch Jacob and his 12 sons. And his 12 sons became lost to history. I mean, people today didn't know, for instance, that Reuben is the tribe of France and that Naphtali is the tribe of Sweden, or the tribe of Naphtali is the modern nation of Sweden, and Zebulun is in Holland, and Dan is in Denmark and Ireland, and so on. And so he revealed these tribes that were lost, whose identity had become lost. But when Jacob was born, what wasn't mentioned is that he had a twin brother by the name of Esau. And Esau was the firstborn, and Jacob stole his birthright. Oh, you could imagine the dysfunctional family trauma that ensued after Jacob stole his brother's birthright. There never was peace and harmony in the family again. And in fact, there hasn't been peace and harmony in the family from that day to this. And there isn't going to be any peace and harmony in that family until the Messiah returns and puts down this worldwide rebellion that's going on all around the world. Now you say to yourself, well, what has this got to do with identity theft? It has everything to do with identity theft, because we identified the 10 tribes of Israel, but we never identified Esau. And Esau is a very important character actor on the world scene, in the play that is being unveiled around the world today. Esau Edom. He's a very important player. And somebody has stolen the identity of the Jews, the identity of Judah. Now today, 70 million evangelicals, these are Christians in the United States. I imagine you've probably got some of those evangelicals in Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa, and so on. But these 70 million evangelicals believe fervently that the people who live in Israel today are the Jews. Now in Israel today, the population is about 5 million. Just a few short of the 5 million that live in New York City. And if you look around the world, the total population of people who call themselves Jews today is about 15 million. Oh, let's add another 5 million. That was a couple of years ago. 20 million people around the world today call themselves Jews, and they practice Judaism. They have a sign. It's called the Sabbath sign. We know that they're Jews because they go to church on Saturday. Everybody knows about this Sabbath sign, don't they? Back in Exodus chapter 31, God gave Moses a little story. I'll share it with you. In chapter 31, he said that the Sabbath was a sign, and he gave that sign to Israel. And, of course, the Jews, being 1/12 of Israel, we found that out from Stephen Collins, these Jews have this sign. The other nations of Israel don't carry this sign. For instance, in America, we keep the Sabbath on Sunday. Sunday is the Sabbath. You people in Australia and New Zealand and Canada and Britain and France and all of the Israelite nations that we've now uncovered, you all know that the Sabbath is on Sunday. And that the Jews are the chosen people because they keep it on Saturday. And you people all know that you're Gentiles because you don't keep the Sabbath. Well, gee, maybe if you kept the Sabbath, maybe you wouldn't be Gentiles. Maybe you'd be Israelites. You ever stop to think about that? Or is that a racial determination? Well, Sammy Davis Jr. was a black man, and he identified with the Sabbath, and he was a Jew. And Marilyn Monroe married a guy, and he was a Jew. She converted to Judaism. She wasn't born a Jew. So we ought to take a look at this identity theft in light of, well, what is a Jew anyway? And how many of them are there? We found out that the tribes of Israel are divided up into 13 separate national entities, of which one of those 13 national entities is called Judah or the Jews. But how many national entities have the Jews divided up into? Has anybody ever thought about that or looked into it? Well, Charles Wiseman has. We'll talk more about that a little later, but listen to this Sabbath sign. The Eternal spoke unto Moses, and he said, "You speak unto the children of Israel, and you tell them, truly my Sabbaths you shall keep." Notice the plural Sabbaths. There's more than one. "Because it's a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Eternal that does sanctify you," or set you apart, that separates you from everybody else. "You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, because it is holy unto you. Every one that defiles it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever does any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Eternal. Whosoever does any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant." Perpetual covenant. That's a perpetual law. It's a perpetual contract. It's a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. Did you get that? It's a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. "Because in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. And he gave to Moses, when he had made an end of the communing with him upon Mount Sinai, 2 tables of the testimony of the tables of stone written with the finger of God." So notice here, God says, this is a sign between me and you. It's a contract. It's a covenant forever, punishable by death. Now take a look at the Israelite nations today. They don't keep the Sabbath. They're not Sabbath keepers. They're Sunday keepers. They're sun worshipers. And on Easter, they go out and worship the sun as it comes up at first light. Just like the Muslims do, they face the east and worship the sun. The world has been made up of sun worship and sun worshipers from day one. The thing that made the Israelites different was that they didn't worship the sun. They worshiped the Creator God, and they did that on Sabbath, or the Sabbath day, once a week. And then there were some other Sabbaths. You'll see those in Leviticus chapter 23. There's 7 of them. 7 annual Sabbaths, 7 annual holy days. Plus there's 2 more that occur once every 7 years and once every 50 years. Those are called land Sabbaths and Jubilees. So there's a bunch of these Sabbaths to be kept. That's why I use the word Sabbaths, plural, not just singular. Now, it isn't any wonder that the Israelites got lost. They stopped keeping the Sabbath. But there was a group of people called the Jews that never got lost. Everybody knows who they are. There isn't an evangelical, there's not a Christian in the world that can't identify a Jew. We all know that those Jews are Israel, that they're the chosen seed of God because they have God's identifying sign on them. Now, those Jews should be very concerned. Every Jew in the world should be very concerned about this identity theft because somebody has stolen this sign. Somebody has stolen this identification that is called Jew, and they've appropriated it to themselves. And they are liars. And they are not Jews. They claim to be, but they're not. And that's why I thought we ought to take a look at the rest of the story of Esau. So, identity theft, then, is identified in the pages of the Bible in Revelation 2, verse 9, and Revelation 3, verse 9. 70 million evangelical Christians, at least in this country, and I suppose that there's probably twice that number in the world, who fervently believe that the nation of Israel, sitting over there in the Middle East today, is those, or is made up of those Jews that are spoken of in the Bible. The president of Iran, I can't pronounce his name so I won't try, but he was just elected here this year. He's the president of Iran, and he gave a speech not too long ago that just outraged everybody in the world. He said that the nation of Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth, and I guess, I can't speak for the man, but I guess what he meant by that was that we should kill all of the Jews. I guess that's what he meant. And I know President Bush, he was outraged, and the United Nations, you know, head honcho over there, Kofi Annan, he was outraged. And of course, the Arabs are sitting over there lauding and clapping and saying, yay, yay, that's what we need to do. Now, these people evidently don't practice the law that says you shall do no murder. You know, exterminating people, killing people is a prerogative that the Ten Commandments suggests might be the sole prerogative of God Almighty Himself, that just running around killing people probably isn't in the best interests of those people or the people that kill them. I just thought I'd share that with you, just as a wild off-the-wall concept over here, because we're in an era of war, and we're leading up to this great battle called Armageddon. We're leading up to the second coming of the Messiah. If you stop and think about it for a minute, that great battle of Armageddon occurs in Israel, 35 miles northwest of Jerusalem. I mean, you're just talking about, you know, 30 minutes north of town. We're going to have a battle out here with 200 million soldiers. Now, you talk about a battle. It's a climactic battle. So the president of Iran is calling for the extermination of the Jews, and in fact, the Arabs have been calling for the extermination of the Jews for a long time. In 1948, an Arab, I believe he was from Saudi Arabia, and I tried to get the direct quotation. I was unable to do that, but I'm going to tell you what it was that I read. This Arab stood up, and he said that these people in Palestine today are not Jews. And he said that he was a descendant of Abraham, and that he could trace his genealogy all the way back to Abraham, but that these people couldn't. That these people are not descended from Jacob Israel. That these people were imposters. That was an Arab that said that. I was amazed when I read that quotation. I was talking to a friend of mine out in California, and he worked at Standard Oil, and he said, well, it's very common for Arabians, Arabs of other countries, but primarily Saudi Arabia, Arabians, to come over to the Standard Oil refinery there in Richmond, California, and learn how the refining business is done and go back home. And he said that when he talked to those Arabs over there, that they said that they were descended from Abraham, that they were the descendants of Abraham through Ishmael. I was amazed. I knew that, and I knew that from the Bible, that Abraham had a woman by the name of, let's see if I can remember her name, Hagar, I believe it was, Hagar, who was the handmaid of his wife Sarah, And Sarah was barren. She couldn't have any children. She told Abraham, well, you go in there and have a baby by way of Hagar, and then I'll take that baby and we'll make him our heir. And he did that. And this boy that was born was named Ishmael, and he's the progenitor of the Arabs to this day. And my friend said, you can ask any Arab, and he will tell you the same thing, that he's a descendant of Abraham through Ishmael. I was amazed. So he had dinner one time, and he invited me over with an Arab from Saudi Arabia, very articulate fellow. And we sat down, we talked a little bit, and I said, now, has Bud told you why it was that I was so interested in coming to dinner tonight? And he said, yes, he had mentioned to me that you were amazed that I knew that I was a descendant of Abraham. And I said, I am amazed, because I just learned this not too long ago myself, that the Arabs were the descendants of Abraham. I said, how many Arabs know that? And he said, I don't know of any Arabs that don't know that. He said, the only people who do not know who they are you Americans. He says, we all know that you're from the tribes of Israel. We all know in Saudi Arabia where the Israelites are today. And that's why we have such amicable relations with the Americans and the English and the French and the Germans and everybody else. Because you're our cousins. Think about that. You know, we're all cousins with the Arabs. And when that Arab told me that, I was just dumbfounded. I was a young man then, and I was dumbfounded then, and I'd be just as dumbfounded today if I heard that story. So it's not the Arabs that are stealing somebody's identity. They know who they are, and they knew who we were. Now, over in England, there's an organization called the British Israel Society, and they keep the genealogy of the royal families of Europe, not just of England, but of Germany. You know Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany? Did you know he was a Jew? Well, we'll take a look at what a Jew is. Queen Elizabeth, did you know she was a Jew? Yeah, that's right. You take a look at Queen Elizabeth, and you take a look at Sammy Davis Jr., and can you see any racial characteristics that might be a little different there? I mean, you'd have to be blind if you couldn't see that. Now, Queen Elizabeth doesn't look like the typical average run-of-the-mill Jew that you see on television being portrayed in Israel. But when you look at Jews in Israel, you'll see that there's just all kinds of stripes and shades of Jews. Some of them are blondes. Did you notice that? Not many, but once in a while you'll see one that'll be on television and she's blonde. I don't know, maybe she dyed her hair, you know, but you'll see them of all different kinds of shapes and sizes and one thing and another. And that kind of surprised me. I was kind of surprised. I mean, you look at a Swede, you know, and you can kind of tell. And you look at a German, you can kind of tell. You know, you look at a Dane, an Irishman, you know, you can kind of tell that those people where they come from. They'll have the same kind of characteristics, racial characteristics. The Jews, you know, when you look at them over there, they've got quite a variety, and there's a reason for that variety. Quite a variety of people. They look a little different. Well, this 1948 Arab stood up and he challenged the ambassador from Israel, and he said, produce for us, if you will please, your genealogy and tell us, identify for us your racial lines. I can do mine. Can you do yours? And you know, the Israeli ambassador didn't have anything more to say. Didn't have another word more to say. So I thought I'd share that with you, because whoever these identity thieves are cannot trace their genealogy back to Judah. Can't trace their genealogy back to Judah. Now I can. See, my name is Gordon, and every once in a while this comes up, not too often, but I'll do a program or a series of programs. Somebody's going to write me a letter now and say, you know, Gordon, you're anti-Semitic. You are anti-Semitic. I did a series of programs here on the subject matter of the what world-famous men have had to say about the Jews. And I made some citations and quotations about people like Benjamin Franklin. Ben Franklin. and George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Napoleon Bonaparte and seven or eight popes about what they said about the Jews. And I got several letters, and they said, you know, Gordon, you're an anti-Semite. And I never at any time, to my knowledge, ever divulged to anybody what my thinking was concerning Jews or Judaism. I never gave anybody my opinion. I'm not giving it to you now. I'm a reporter. I just report facts. I go out and do research, and I report facts. I review books. I take a look at somebody's work, and I say, this guy is telling the truth because we can document it and we can prove it. This guy over here is just speculating. That's his opinion. And I don't know if Benjamin Franklin knew something or not, but Ben Franklin had this to say. He said, I fully agree with General Washington that we must protect this young nation from an insidious influence and impenetration. That menace, gentlemen, is the Jews. Benjamin Franklin, born in 1706, died in 1790. And he said that he agreed with General Washington that we must protect this young nation from an insidious influence and impenetration. That menace, gentlemen, is the Jews. He went on to say more. He said, in whatever country Jews have settled in any great number, they have lowered its moral tone, depreciated its commercial integrity. They have segregated themselves and have not been assimilated. They have sneered at and tried to undermine the Christian religion upon which that nation is founded by objecting to its restrictions, have built up a state within the state and have opposed, have tried to strangle that country to death financially, as in the case of Spain and Portugal. He said that for over 1,700 years, the Jews have been bewailing their sad fate in that they have been exiled from their homeland, as they call Palestine. But gentlemen, did the world give it to them in fee simple, they would at once find some reason for not returning. And why? Because they're vampires. And vampires do not live on vampires. They cannot live only among themselves. They must subsist on Christians and other peoples not of their race. If you do not exclude them from these United States and this Constitution, in less than 200 years, they will have swarmed here in such great numbers that they will dominate and devour the land and change our form of government, for which we Americans have shed our blood, given our lives, our substance, and jeopardized our liberty. If you do not exclude them, in less than 200 years, our descendants will be working in the fields to furnish them substance, while they will be in the counting houses rubbing their hands. And I warn you, gentlemen, that if you do not exclude Jews for all time, your children will curse you in your graves. Jews, gentlemen, are Asiatics. And let them be born where they will or how many generations they are away from Asia. They'll never be otherwise. Their ideas do not conform to an American's ideas. And they will never, not even though they live among us for 10 generations. A leopard cannot change its spots. Jews are Asiatics. They're a menace to this country if permitted entrance and should be excluded by the Constitutional Convention. Now, he said that at the Constitutional Convention. So before you write me an email and you say, hey, Gordon, you dirty anti-Jewish, anti-Semite, I'm not giving you my opinion. That's the opinion of Benjamin Franklin. But why did Benjamin Franklin have that idea? What gave him that perspective? Where did he get that idea? Is there something that he knew that maybe we who have been to the public school system don't know here in this country? Maybe you've never heard this in Australia before. Maybe you've never heard this in your life before. But Ben Franklin evidently had heard it. And I'm not going to rehash what famous men have said. You can look that up on the archive. And there were 84 very famous people that I cited, and here's what they had to say about these people that we call Jews today. Now, Christians, evangelicals around the world believe with fervent passion that the people who live in Palestine today, called Israelis, are Jews, And in fact, we found out from Stephen M. Collins that some of them actually are. Some of them actually are. But somebody out there, boys and girls, somebody, somewhere, somehow, is claiming to be a Jew who isn't. Who are they? Where are they? And can we identify them? Well, stand by. I've got to give you a reminder here, and we'll be right back with more on who is Esau, Edom, and identity theft when we come back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not necessarily mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate and recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, go to the source. That's the website, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. We're talking about identity theft, national identity theft. Now, when somebody's identity is stolen, we get real excited about that and say, oh my God, maybe that could happen to me. Maybe somebody might steal my identity and go out and run up a lot of bills on my credit card. When somebody steals the identity of an entire nation and does it for thousands of years, what would you call that? A crime? A tragedy? Well, in the ancient time in the land of the Bible, over 3,700 years ago, a woman by the name of Rebekah, the wife of the patriarch Isaac, was informed by God that she would give birth to twins whose fate would be as diverse as their character. The birth of these twins, Esau and Jacob, and their ensuing destinies would have the most profound impact on future events in the world. This analysis of the history and prophecy of Esau and his descendants will unveil many of the problems in the world today and will bring a new perspective on such things as wars and conflicts, Zionism, political conspiracies, anti-Semitism, economic problems, and the Jewish issue. This material will also explain why one group of people have made concerted efforts for the establishment of hate laws, world government, abortions, crime, interracial marriages, wars, deindustrialization, and slavery. The ancient and pronounced struggle that prevailed between Esau and Jacob still exists today, and it is causing the world to be turned upside down. The question of who is Esau Edom undoubtedly involves the most stupendous drama ever enacted in the annals of mankind. And that drama is presented here to help us better understand God's plans for man here on planet Earth. So now that we know where the tribes of Israel are today, there was an important element that was missing. Not that Mr. Collins has omitted something. He didn't tell us in his book that he was going to identify Esau Edom. He just said, I'm going to identify these 12 tribes of Israel. And he did that, and he did it very, very well, in my view. Now, who is this guy Esau? He's the brother of Jacob. Jacob received the birthright, but Jacob was the second born. Has anybody ever wondered about, well, how did Jacob get the birthright away from his brother? That's a fabulous story. You'll see it recorded in the book of Genesis about how Jacob and his mother conspired against their husband and father Isaac, who was blind. And they dressed Jacob up, and they put a skin on him because his brother was hairy all over. His brother was a different race. Both born, they were twins. And in the prophecy it said, two nations are coming out of you. Two nations were coming out of Rebekah's womb. Esau, which is later called Edom in the Bible, and Jacob, who we talked about last week. He had 12 boys, and those 12 boys are fully identifiable today. Those nations and tribes don't know who they are today. I mean, you go to Denmark and ask the average Dane, are you a descendant of Jacob? You know, they'd say, no, we're Gentiles. Why we're not Israelites? And that's because they're Christians. And all of the Christians in the world know that they're Gentiles. They've been taught that from the time they're little children growing up. And as I pointed out when we began today's program, they've lost their identifying sign. They don't keep the Sabbath. They don't have the Sabbath signs. And the Jews in Palestine do. The people who call themselves Jews today, they've got the identifying sign. They've got the credit card and the credit card numbers, and they've got the social security number to back them up. I mean, they've got the evidence. And the average guy today who lives in these Israelite countries, he's a Christian. He's not a Jew. And he'll tell you plainly, I don't practice Judaism. I'm a Christian. Somebody somewhere has been deceived. Somebody somewhere doesn't have all the facts. Somebody somewhere is an identity thief. We don't know who he is yet because we haven't got that far, but somebody somewhere isn't telling the whole truth. Now, we have to take a look here at the history of this thing of Esau Edom. To help answer the question of who is this Esau Edom, the first necessary step is to examine the racial and genealogical history of Esau and his descendants. The life and history of Esau. He was the firstborn of Isaac, and thus was heir to the birthright derived from the direct racial lineage of Adam up to Noah to Abraham. Thus, Esau was racially a Hebrew. He is a Semite, a Hebrew. The racial stock of the white race came from Noah through Shem. Esau, Uncle Esau. So just as Esau despised his birthright in Genesis 25, verse 34, when he sold it to Jacob, he also despised his race by marrying strange women outside of his race. Esau married the daughters of Canaan or Canaanites, as we see in Genesis 28, verse 6, and Genesis 36, verse 2, the daughters of Heth or the Hittites, Genesis 26, 34, Genesis 27:46 and Genesis 36:2, the daughters of Ishmael in Genesis 28:9 and Genesis 36:3, the daughters of the Hivites in Genesis 36:2. He had intermarried with the Horites in Genesis 36:19-21 and Jasher 30:28. These interracial marriages were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah, Esau's parents, as we read in Genesis 26:35. And the descendants of Esau from these marriages became known as Edomites or as Edom, as is recorded in Genesis 36:1-9. The Edomites also possessed some Israelite blood by the intermarriages, as in the case of Solomon that we read about in 1 Kings 11:1. So one of the characteristics of Edom, or of Esau, is interracial marriage. That Esau believed in marrying outside of his race. Esau was very cosmopolitan. Esau didn't see any difference between one race and another, and didn't see any reason why he should not intermarry. Now, I was watching some tapes the other day. In fact, I'm going to identify the guy's tapes. It's Kent Hovind. And I have recommended Kent Hovind's tapes from time to time on evolution. If there's anybody that knows evolution and special creation and science better than Kent Hovind, send me a letter. Let me know who he is, because I'd like to know more. This guy Hovind is really on the ball. He's a Baptist preacher, and I don't hold that against him. And he's a heck of a nice guy. He's a great speaker. You'll love his tapes. For $100, you can get these Kent Hovind tapes. And I recommend them. I sit up here on the Sabbath day, and sometimes I'll go over and I'll pick up one of those tapes and I'll stick it in the player and watch it and laugh and hoot and jeer and jump up and down, paw the ground, bite the bushes, and do all those things that people do, you know, when they're really excited, you know. And I recommend them for my children, one thing and another. But in one of his tapes, Kent Hovind said that he could not see anywhere in the Bible where God prohibited interracial marriage. Couldn't find any place in the Bible where the prohibition against interracial marriage occurred. And I thought to myself, well, boy, I'm glad I'm not a preacher, because, you know, I'm just a plumber. I'm an old-timey general contractor, a tradesman, you know, a blue-collar worker, one of those guys, you know, that picks up his lunch box and his hard hat and steel-toed shoes and goes out here on a construction site and bangs nails and puts pipes together and strings wire and things like that. And just as a crummy contractor, plumber, carpenter, I could find 6 or 8 places in the Bible that tell you not to interracially marry. And this is one of them right here. This marriage, these several marriages that Esau had with these Gentile women, these foreigners and aliens, these non-Hebrews, these other racial people, was a grievance of mind to both Isaac and Rebekah. So evidently Isaac and Rebekah were anti-Semitic racist bastards who just couldn't understand race relations, obviously. Because we see it right there, it was a grievance of mind to them. So there's one place right there that would indicate to me in Genesis 36:1-9, Is that the spot? These interracial marriages were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah, Esau's parents, in Genesis 26:35. Genesis 26:35. There was another guy that had a problem with interracial marriage. It was the father of one of the judges of Israel named Samson. And he liked this woman Delilah. She was a Philistine. And that got him into a world of trouble. But he wanted to marry one of these Philistines, and he said to his daddy, run down there and buy her for me, because I really like her. And he said, are there no women in Israel that you have to go marry one of these Philistines? Now, that's not a direct command, you know, don't marry outside of your race, but it's a couple of indications that a couple of prominent Hebrew Israelites said to their sons, Aren't there any other women around here that you have to go over to some foreign country or some foreign nation? So before you write me a letter and say, well, what's wrong with blacks? I never said there was anything wrong with blacks. We should have left those people alone in Africa. That was their inheritance, and butted out. If you want to know who the purveyors of interracial marriage is or are around the world, it's the Anglo-Saxons. It's not the Chinese. You don't see those guys running around trying to find some strange wives someplace. But while we're on the subject of strange wives over here, I don't know if you've ever done any research into the scripture, but in Ezra 9, verses 1 and 2, let's just flip over here, a little obscure book called Ezra and Nehemiah. And Moses had a little something to say about it, too. In fact, in Deuteronomy 7, verses 2 and 3, I guess we ought to start there. Deuteronomy 7, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, chapter 7, verses 2 and 3, God had something to say about this thing of interracial marriage. He says, when the Eternal your God shall deliver them before you, you shall smite them and totally destroy them, and you shall make no covenant with them, nor show any mercy unto them, and neither shall you make marriages with them. Thy daughter you shall not give unto his son, nor his daughter shall you take unto your son. So he's talking to these people. Now, when you go into Canaan over here, and you take these Canaanites and Hittites and Hivites and Perizzites, and he said, I want you to destroy them. Throw them out of here. And don't make any marriages with them. Now, that doesn't sound like Kent Hovind telling me he couldn't find any place in the Bible that would prohibit interracial marriage. Well, we find here that Isaac and Rebekah didn't approve of it. There's another place here I guess we ought to go back to. Did you know that the first segregation occurred in Genesis chapter 11? And that it was God himself that created segregation. I know what you're thinking. You're sitting there saying, well, segregation is discrimination. No, segregation is separation. And there's a statute in here that says you shall not oppress the stranger that's within your gate. That's the crime. The crime is in oppressing a stranger within your gate, not in segregating yourself from him and not making marriages with him. You know, the Chinese live in Chinatown in San Francisco, and they're not making marriages with the white man around him. He practices segregation. He gets along quite nicely in San Francisco, in California, in the United States, among his own people. He understands that marrying outside of his race isn't right. He may not know from the Bible that it's wrong, but he knows that it doesn't make any sense. And that it's only going to cause problems because different races of people have different characteristics. They have different perspectives. They have different religions and different politics and different ideologies, different ways of living, different customs, different habits. And they don't get along well together. So over in Genesis 11, there's a story here about the Tower of Babel. And God divided all of the nations of the world, all of the family groups, all of the racial groups. He put in their inheritance or their inhabit or their habitation. He put the Chinese and the Orientals in Asia. He put the blacks in Africa, and he put the whites in the Middle East and Europe. Now, it was God, the very first racist on planet Earth, that divided up the Earth's resources and divided up the Earth's people by their racial characteristics and gave them their inheritance. So don't write me a letter now and tell me that I'm a racist. I'm a reporter, and I'm reporting Genesis 11. Read it for yourself. As they say in Blue Room, read them and weep. That's Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9. I don't need to read it to you. You can go read it for yourself. It's in the Bible. And he scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, or Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Eternal scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. Mankind has been working his heart out from that day to this to get all of mankind back together so they can interracially breed, interracially work, and linguistically work together. That's what this New World Order is all about. We're going to create a one world government. They were trying to do it then. They did it before the flood and God destroyed the world. They tried to do it after the flood and he confounded their languages and scattered them abroad. And we have been working from that day to this to bring about this one world government. And it's about to bring about the destruction of the earth. I mean, you got to hand it to us. You know, we've got a one-tracked mind, and by God, we're going to do what we're going to do. God also has a one-tracked mind, and he said, you're not going to do it, because I'm not going to allow it. So there's that story. Now in Nehemiah, Ezra 10, verses 1 through 5 in Nehemiah. Now flip over here to Ezra. We got time here for one or two of them. And we'll take it up here next time, and I'll show you here that when we're talking about interracial marriage, Kent Hovind over here, nice guy, no doubt, he's a great fellow, but he couldn't find any place in the Bible that prohibited interracial marriage, so I thought maybe I'd share with you here in Nehemiah 13, Nehemiah chapter 13, verse 23. Listen to this. It says, in those days also saw I Jews that had married wives of Ashdod and Ammon and of Moab. And their children spake half in the speech of Ashdod and could not speak in the Jews' language, but according to the language of each people. And I contended with them, and I cursed them, and I smote certain of them, and I plucked off their hair, and I made them swear by God, saying, you shall not give your daughters unto their sons, nor take their daughters unto your sons or for yourselves. Did not Solomon, the king of Israel, sin by these things? And yet among many nations there was no king like him, who was beloved of his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, even him did outlandish women cause to sin. Shall we then hearken unto you to do all of this great evil, to transgress against our God in marrying strange wives? Come on, Mr. Hovind, you Christian preacher, you. That's a pretty plain statement there. You know, Nehemiah 13, I give you these verses again so you can go look it up. Nehemiah 13, verses 23 through 27. We'll have to take it up there next time. And I'll cover Ezra and Nehemiah. The point I'm making is that interracial marriage is not very common, even to this day. Only 1% of Americans engage in interracial marriage, but it's promoted. It's the public policy of the nation. And Nehemiah and the Bible call it a sin. They call it a great evil. They call it wickedness. And to give a couple of examples of Solomon, who was loved by God and went out and married these outlandish women, called strange wives in the Bible. So in case you couldn't find any places in the Bible that tell you not to practice interracial marriage, there's just one more. I've given you four or five already. We'll have to take it up right there next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review when we come back with identity theft next time. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.